All right, guys, welcome to the Wrestling Brothers Fan Network. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Greg.
We're here to talk a little bit about what's been going on in wrestling this week from a fan's perspective. As you know, hey, we watch the shows like you guys do. We're not insiders. We're not into the business of professional wrestling. We're just fans, but we've been fans for a very long time. And as brothers, we have this unique experience that we've been watching wrestling together for over 35 years. So we've seen a lot, and we're here to talk about what we're seeing now. So, Greg, this week, Monday Night Raw, two big happenings. A bunch of happenings, really, but two main ones that are advertised this week. The return of Roman Reigns and, woo, the 70th birthday of the Nature Boy. What'd you think?
Well, I think you're losing the fact that this was probably the return show of Bruce Pritchard to a top position of creative. So really what it's going to boil down to is the question, was there a difference? So why don't you take the ball rolling on the whole Roman Reigns thing, since that was the opener to the show.
Yeah, so back in October, we had the very shocking news of Roman Reigns coming out and saying, my name's Joe and I've been living with leukemia. And he relinquished the Universal title and pretty much announced that he's going to step away from the business a little bit and get healed up and fight his battle with leukemia. So last night, he came back and announced to the world that he is in remission and that the big dog is back to claim his yard. But I've been amazed by some of the mixed reactions. Obviously, on the crowd at Monday Night Raw, we saw nothing but support, a lot of love, a lot of cheers, a lot of people chanting the welcome back, Roman's family's there. It's just, it's a great celebration.
Well, let's start off with this. First of all, you know, congratulations that the leukemia seems to be in remission. Like you said, I know there's a lot of Facebook input. There's a lot of folks that are questioning if this was legitimate. I'm not jumping on a bandwagon. I'm not saying that I think anything was not legitimate. Quite frankly, I wouldn't put anything past Vince McMahon, but everything that I've ever heard about the Samoan named Joe, I have no reason to believe that he would ever partake in such a cheap stunt. Now, that being said, there is that backlash, and two reasons. First of all, we do know Vince has pretty much demonstrated he's capable of doing anything. And second of all, let's face it, this is wrestling. I mean, the entire business of wrestling is based on working the fans. So, you know, whether it's stupid things like Triple H having sex with a corpse, or, you know, Ric Flair's fake heart attack in WCW, or
Mark Henry and the birth of a hand,
or Fritz Von Erich doing the heart attack angle back in World Class back in the late 70s, early 80s, whatever that was.
And how many injuries are written just to get someone off TV for a while because they're making a movie or need some time off, they're in rehab? I mean, stories get told on television.
Yeah, and they're, by the nature of the business, a lot of times they're tragic stories. So I get the backlash. I'm not going to sit here and buy into it because, again, everything that I know about Joe, and I use that reference not because I'm, pardon me, the smart mark, but I'm trying to differentiate between him as Joe the human and Roman Reigns the wrestler. So that's, if I say that, you'll know why. I don't know of anything that would ever cause me to believe that Joe would go in for something like that. So all that aside, congratulations. Glad that he's healthy. Glad that he's ready to come back. I know he looks like he's lost some muscle, obviously. But it is going to be interesting to see exactly where they take this angle and go with it from there. Because, you know, they made it public back in October. They got to make it public, bringing him back. And it is going to figure into whatever the direction they take Reigns in. So how do you think that they're going to take him with this from this point forward?
Well, that's a good question, because they didn't waste a whole lot of time of getting Roman Reigns back into the ring for a little action. So we've got Dean Ambrose, who I guess is a face now. He's kind of back in the good graces, or
Who knows? Who cares? You know, he's on his way out.
Or is he? Is this part of the elaborate work? Because he challenges Drew McIntyre, says it's a no disqualification match. He interrupts Elias, who I guess he puts the beat down on, making a little bit of a pun with the music, the song, Dirty Deeds, which I was kind of hoping Elias would have cranked out a few bars of that. That would have actually been pretty awesome if he'd just done it on the spot.
Yeah, right.
But so he pretty much Dean Ambrose gets the beat down. So the gentleman's club of Drew McIntyre, Baron Corbin, and Bobby Lashley all come in and just thump Dean Ambrose, but to the rescue, the remaining two-thirds of the Shield, they clean house, and my brother and I were texting during this, we didn't watch it together, but they high-five, they walk out, and I text my brother, I was like, and there's Dean in the corner dead. But there's a little stop, and like, hey, should we go back? And Dean's like, hey, Thanks, man. So are they going to do a soft reboot, as the movie industry likes to call it, of The Shield and reconcile them? Or, you know, here's where I think the people who are, and again, let me be very clear, my brother and I are not suggesting that we know, we're not even arrogant enough to say that we could possibly know that any reason of why this is an elaborate hoax, but yes, come on, pal. Fans can't turn on you if they think if you're dying, pal. So he comes back just in time for WrestleMania. He's already wearing a shirt of Roman Reigns overcomes. I can see where people who, if they want to be cynical and hate everything about the world, could point fingers at it. And hey, might it not be a fantastic box office draw? Brock Lesnar, Seth Rollins, and Roman Reigns in a triple threat match, because Roman never lost his belt. What do you think?
Well, first of all, you missed a key element here.
I probably did.
You know, after the whole opening monologue with Roman in the ring, then they did the little thing where Seth Rollins' music played, Seth come out on the stage, they did the whole hugging thing. Conspicuous in his absence, they did not bring Dean out for that like they did back in October when they brought him out and all three of them did the hug. They didn't bring him out for that.
Well, how could they, though, after the what I thought was actually not a very good angle with Dean's turn, but it would have been very awkward if he'd come out all huggy-huggy after everything that him and Seth had been through.
Well, no, because you go back to October.
There was tension then.
Well, all of that was out of character, or supposed to be portrayed as out of character. The speech by Roman Reigns last night, him going around and continually hugging his mother, and I mean, you know, that's out of character. They could have brought Dean Ambrose out for that moment. Nobody would have cared.
Out of character in the sense of the kayfabe, not that it's out of character for Joe, but like, yeah, it's not the wrestler.
It was one part of the angle.
It wasn't part of the angle. It was part of his announcement.
So that didn't mean it. They could have brought Dean out. They could have had the three of them, whatever. WWE has to be careful how they use Roman on this because, first of all, if you stick him in that match with Seth and Brock, you know, the fans right now, they want to be behind Roman. They want to cheer him. But if you just take him and do what you were doing with him before leukemia came back, you're going to end up in the same position in terms of the fans hating him because he's getting shoved down their throats too fast. You got to do a slow burn with Roman. You can't stick him in that title match. You know, you've got the setup with, and by the way, I hated that angle in terms of Dean and Drew McIntyre because you bring out Lashley and, who was the other guy?
Baron Corbin, yeah.
Yeah, that guy.
I always trip on too. You know, the other guy.
Yeah, Corbin. Yeah, that's
good. Constable Corbin. Yeah. Whatever.
So you bring that doofus out. Anyway, for better or for worse, those three guys right now are positioned as the top heels on Raw. Like it or not, that's just how it is. And so you bring out Seth, you bring out Roman. Roman, who hasn't been in a ring in 5 months. Roman, who presumably is weak from the leukemia and the treatments and the illness and the whole nine yards. He gets in there. Superman punches everybody, spears people. You know, so you're burying your top heels to a guy who, quite frankly, probably really isn't even legitimately ready to go full bore anyway. So I hated that part of the angle. To me, the best thing to do with Roman, if you're going to use him at WrestleMania, and you know they're going to, because WrestleMania, all hands on deck, everybody's got to be on board. If Roman's able to crawl there, he'll be there. You got Seth in the title match with Brock. You put Dean Ambrose. You put Roman Reigns. You bring Kurt Angle back out. You put them in a three-man tag team because Angle's also been feuding with McIntyre and whatever. Put them against those three, and one of two things either happen. You either bury Dean and have him lose if he's really on his way out the door, or you give Roman a soft victory just to kind of get the fans behind him, even though he doesn't have to do a lot of the work. To me, that's how I go with it from there.
Yeah, and I'm even okay if Roman Reigns is just simply in Seth's corner and maybe does a little fights off of Bobby Lashley and Drew McIntyre, who maybe try to come in and schmoz the matchup and just, you know, something to where, yeah, he's not competing at the highest level. Because it would seem, now admittedly, he's got, what, 5-6 weeks now to kind of get into a little bit of ring shape. And, you know, it's a nice little homage back to WrestleMania, what, 31 back in 2015 when Seth Rollins busted into the match and they kind of for a few moments had those three in a three-way match. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I mean, I think you're right. They got to be really careful. And really, I personally hate the term that the internet wrestling community uses with, oh, they're just trying to shove Roman Reigns down our throat. You know, he's been at the top in the main roster for 6 or 7 years. It isn't too fast. This might be too fast for he just got back. Seth's having his moment. Let him have at it. But yeah, they got to do it well. I think making this a triple threat match when you possibly have another triple threat match going on with Ronda, Becky, and Charlotte, if that happens, which...
Well, and potentially Daniel Bryan, Kevin Owens, and Kofi that we'll talk about here in a little bit.
Yeah, from today's SmackDown news. So.
By the way, I hate that term, internet wrestling community.
I use it actually as a derogatory term because I think there's a portion of the fans on the internet who channel through kind of whatever they're told to say. Like when somebody who I talk to in real life says, oh, I don't like Roman Reigns, or shoving him down our throats, like, okay, what website told you to say that? Because that is the exact phrase that everyone uses. Like, Vince is just shoving him down. Okay, who told you to say that line? Because to me, that's the internet wrestling community. Not the great fans who are listening to us. They're awesome.
I don't know. They might be douches too. I don't know.
All right, well, let's move on to the, do you want to talk the Ronda Rousey thing?
No, actually, I don't want to talk about anything involving Ronda Rousey.
I got to be really honest with you. I respect Ronda Rousey as
I'm getting tired of the storyline already.
Well, I obviously respect her as an actual real-life competitor and athlete and all that jazz. But, like, when she starts talking and is sort of feigning that, like, I'm getting really emotional and worked up here, I have to mute my my TV. I can't hear the dialogue, especially when the other half of that dialogue is Stephanie McMahon. I'm just like, all right, what? Whatever. So I kind of watched it like an old Charlie Chaplin movie to where she's getting mad, and then puts the belt down and walks off. I'm like, huh. So here's another thing with the internet wrestling community. Like, man, did Ronda spoil the three-way match? No, she's setting it up. She's the one in the storyline who's sparking, hey, I want her back in. You reinstate her because I want her. That's the storyline that makes the three-way match happen. Duh.
Well, from my perspective, they started this storyline way too early. You know, to spend the next 6 weeks playing this thing out, it's just going to be like a root canal. You know, all you needed was 3 weeks to tell this story. And I'm already losing interest in it. Yeah, it's going to be a good match. If it's two of them in it, if it's three of them, we know it's going to be three of them in it. It's going to be a good match. The rest of it from here is just boring me. You've left out a storyline that I actually want to discuss.
Well, lay it on us.
Bobby Lashley and Lilo Rush.
Why in the world would you want to talk about that?
Okay, well, first of all...
No, go ahead.
First of all, it's weird. But, you know, first of all, I don't know if you happen to catch the match that Rush had with Finn Balor.
Of course, in the moment of
bliss. Yeah, we know Lilo Rush actually is a talented little wrestler. And I say little, not insulting, but reality is he's a little wrestler.
He's he
makes Finn Balor look giant.
Yes.
So obviously they don't really have any plans for Lilo Rush as a wrestler because...
Wait a minute, can I stop you a second? What's his first name?
Leo.
Okay, you said Lilo.
Again, it doesn't matter. That's fine. He's Lilo.
Yeah, so is Bobby does that make Bobby Lashley Stitch?
The little tiny guy.
Okay, Leo Rush.
Who cares? Anyway, they obviously don't have any intentions of using him seriously as a wrestler. Because if they were, while he put up a good match against Finn Balor still had no difficulty beating him, even after Finn Balor, quote, hurt the knee. You know, Finn Balor is only 190 pounds himself. So the more interesting thing to me was the after promo back in the back between Rush and Bobby Lashley.
Uh-huh.
Where Lashley, first of all, proving why he needs Lilo. Proving why he needs Leo, because that was one of the worst promos I've ever heard anybody give. I mean, it just was not good. Bobby Lashley cannot talk, so he needs somebody to talk.
I'm not gonna lie. Even though I would not sit here and tell you it was great, I didn't find it jarring of how he and Leo dialogued. I don't think it was horrible, but you're right.
It was horrible.
He's not the American Dream Dusty Rhodes getting out there and laying a champion promo.
That's why I don't understand the storyline. Obviously, they're getting to a point where they're going to split the two of them up, which I don't understand. Because
Bobby's got Baron and Drew now. He doesn't need to talk. He's just more muscle.
Well, but that's not going to last.
It's like he's in two angles, two different angles that are unrelated whatsoever, which is the part I think is weird.
Well, but beside that, you know, he needs somebody to talk for him. Leo has no other value. So, you know, if you're going to split him up, that means basically Leo goes bye-bye. Because, I mean, the options are Leo gets himself another guy to fight Bobby, or he vanishes, or God forbid, he actually gets involved in a personal one-on-one feud with Bobby, which nobody wants to see, given their 150-pound weight difference. So I don't know what they're doing with that angle. Leo's only got one good purpose. That's to talk. Bobby needs somebody to talk. I don't know why we're going down this avenue. But, you know, it wasted time on my TV having to watch it. So I figured I'd waste your time by talking about it.
Fair enough. So let's go to the main event of the program anyway.
Before you do that.
Oh, come on. How many times are you going to cut me off with this?
I want to talk about the tag team situation.
What tag team situation? Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. I want to talk about, first of all, the two different angles going on simultaneously. You've got the Revival, who are the current Raw Tag Team Champions.
Who apparently can't win a match.
Losing twice, 2 weeks in a row, to NXT tag teams, non-title bouts. So like you just said, they can't win a match. Then you got this funny deal with Ricochet and Aleister Black, who not only beat them last night, they also wrestled on SmackDown. I didn't see the match. Did they beat Rusev and what's his name?
Yes,
of course they did. So
the one thing I hate is like, hey, let's bring in these fan favorites of NXT and totally put them over up against other former fan favorites of NXT that we brought over. What sense does it make for these guys to be getting over on people like The Revival or Shinsuke or people who were, you know, last week's NXT heroes? I mean, 6 months from now, Aleister Black and Ricochet, yesterday's news and the, now everyone's bored with this one. Bring in a couple other ones.
Well, and talking about a different topic but completely related, what you just said, and I think you missed this angle because you didn't know what I was talking about, but then there was also the backstage angle with
Heavy Machinery.
The Ascension and, yeah, Heavy Machinery.
I did catch a little bit. I caught that with Ascension. When you texted that to me, I thought they did something else, but go ahead.
Another team you're bringing in from NXT. You're playing the one guy. Obviously, they're bringing him in as a comedy act, and I know Vince loves his little comedy acts. And if you get to be a comedy act on Raw, then that's better than, you know, Zack Ryder or somebody who you never see. But can I tell you just how much I hate that Otis character?
Yeah.
I mean, did you actually see the Otis character?
I know what you're talking about. I was still sort of in the mutant mode because I was on the phone during the time, so I didn't catch what it was all about. But yeah, I know what you're talking about with Otis.
So you got tag teams like Heavy Machinery, Authors of Pain, Ascension. You got all these NXT tag teams you're bringing in, Revival.
By the way, what's the story with Authors of Pain? They're like killing it.
They've vanished. You don't ever see them.
I mean, is like one of them injured or something?
That I know of. But and I guess you still got Gable and Rude and whatever. You actually got some teams there you can make a serious...
Well, you do now.
...division.
But wasn't it SummerSlam when they did the tag team division versus the tag team division, and it kind of felt like, particularly on the Raw side, that the majority of the tag teams were just slapped together so they could justify having a tag team versus tag team match? And then it was on the pre-show, I believe.
But
so
then
it's like,
I still have no interest in it.
Oh, absolutely none, because they weren't... It's not like you had the Road Warriors, the Steiners, and the Horsemen versus the Hart Foundation, the Bulldogs, and the Killer Bees, where you're like, whoa, that's awesome.
If Bruce Pritchard is back writing and booking and doing anything...
But apparently last night was his first night back, so maybe he hasn't touched it yet.
He better put some attention into the tag team scene or just get rid of it, because, you know, to me it's just stupid. But anyway...
Well, don't squash your NXT talent that just came up with NXT talent
that just
who
came
literally
up.
Just walked in the door.
Yeah. But anyway, okay, Ric Flair's birthday. Go ahead.
Yeah, let's get to
I know
that.
You've been dying to talk about that. That's all you've been talking about.
Don't oversell this. But I will admit, Atlanta, Georgia, Ric Flair's 70th birthday. It's been all over the internet. He had a big party that ESPN covered, blah, blah, blah.
It was
blah,
cool
blah.
To see Sting.
Hey,
and Steamer.
Yeah, I was going to say, anytime Ricky Steamboat, Sting, they're going to come out because they're lifelong buddies and, you know, quote-unquote rivals of Flair. They're the obvious two people to bring out. I was waiting for, like, and his best friend ever, Arn Anderson. Oh.
I love how Sting snubs Seth Rollins on the way to the ring.
I commented on one of the Facebook groups I follow for wrestling action figures that Seth Rollins is lucky that the ball bat didn't come across his knee.
Hey, Sting Pay. Okay, we'll talk later. Good seeing you.
Yeah. But anyway, the birthday party... look, I get it's one of the tropes of, like, if there's a celebration, a wedding of any variety or whatever,
it's always going to go wrong.
Something bad's going to happen. Although, you know, Ric Flair's retirement, you know, they had a really nice touching thing the next day that didn't become an angle.
Yeah, so, let me just say I hated that belt.
Oh, well, let's one step at a time. I guess that was one of the first things that happened. But a couple things I thought was interesting was, like, and I don't know, maybe they're great buddies in real life. I know Kurt Angle was one of the first or second guest ever on Ric Flair's Woo Nation podcast years ago. So maybe they're super best buds from the old TNA and his earlier run in the WWF. But I was like,
No, I doubt it.
Rick Steamboat, Sting, and Kurt Angle. I'm like, one of these things is not like the other.
That was just an excuse to get the audience to chant, "You suck."
He's an active wrestler, apparently. I mean, he's not for long. He's wrestling regularly, but whatever. But then...
he's done in a month.
Obviously, Ric Flair doesn't come out. Because Batista apparently thought, hey, I'm going to get Triple H's attention by beating up the 70-year-old man. I don't even want to know what happened to Wendy. But he drags a poor cameraman to a door, runs in there. I don't know, did Batista...
Of course, we don't get the camera angle of that guy. Until it's all over. Drags the guy to the door, goes in, leaves the camera guy outside. What did you need the camera guy for? But anyway, yeah.
But here's the thing. Was I led to believe that Batista went in there to beat up Flair, then pulled the body out, or was he just pulled the body out because he did it earlier?
Well, no, you could hear the cartoon, pew, bam, bang, bang, you know, it was
that
like a Batman
just been
thing.
Dragging, but what I did think was funny is that, but like, man, is he all blown up by beating up the 70-year-old man?
Yeah, he was a little gassed. Yeah. By the way, I thought Triple H was pretty much out of action for like a long time because of his torn pec.
I mean, what I understood that happened in November?
Well, yeah, but I mean, they're talking like a year or something. You know, he had to have surgery to reattach his thing. And I mean, I was certainly...
By April, though? I mean, that's 4 or 5 months from the surgery. That's plausible.
For a 48-year-old guy?
Well, but come on.
Who has a history of tearing things off the bone?
Yeah. Well, that I can't speak to, but like, here's the thing. We needed the 70th birthday charade in Atlanta to set up Batista and Triple H.
Apparently.
Huh? I gotta admit, I'm a huge lifelong Ric Flair fan. I just kind of wanted to see the celebration, a little hoop and holler. What I always find funny about these, just from a kayfabe storyline perspective, is everyone in the ring and outside the ring by the Jumbotron saw Ric Flair get murdered, and only Triple H runs in the back to see what's happening. Sting and Steamboat are like, well, Flair's dead, let's cut the cake.
Well, they could care less, but yeah. Hey, Sean, let me see that belt. Yeah, okay.
Well, I got two thoughts. Number one, the one thing I will say that I like about a Batista-Triple H match at WrestleMania is that it's not Triple H, for lack of better words,
wasting
a match on someone who, look, it's all about entertainment and box office and drawing a big WrestleMania, but we all know WrestleMania sells out on its own, so... I really hated AJ Styles and Shane McMahon at WrestleMania a couple years ago. Did they put on a great match? Yeah, I watched a little bit. I mean, hey, they're very exciting. Shane McMahon will kill himself to have a great match. I'm not putting down his work rate.
He's Mick Foley.
Yeah, I'm not putting down his work rate, but man, I want AJ Styles because the year before he put over Jericho, who didn't need to be put over at a WrestleMania at his age, but give him a more meaningful match at WrestleMania because He's AJ Styles. He's one of your current top guys.
Oh, no. It is a privilege to be in the ring with a McMahon. That's a push.
And, yeah, I get the theory behind it, but, again, this is a podcast where we're fans reacting as fans, and as fans, it doesn't click for me. What do you think of that?
Truthfully, I don't really care. There's two things I ask. Keep it short and don't put it on at the end. If you want to use it in the first hour and burn off 7 minutes, because that's all Batista's going to be able to go, and maybe even Triple H, too. I mean, I don't know. Like I said, the status of his injury, whatever. Am I excited about it? No. You know, one of the Facebook things had, you know, everybody's all, scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you about Triple H Batista? -3. I don't care. It doesn't mean anything. Batista's a one-shot deal. He's going to go off and make another movie. Whoever wins, they're not going to get... Who cares?
There's no stakes.
No, whatever.
But is Batista sort of the replacement Rock in the sense that right around the same time, the new Avengers movie is going to come out, so Batista's out there, big name, has been some big box office roles.
Well, that's the intent, but he's not going to have the same impact because he's not the Rock. I mean...
Well, he's clearly the heel in all this and, like, murdering 70-year-old men in order to get somebody's attention.
And he's 50 years old.
I think he's only 48, thank you.
Who cares? And he's not nearly as, noticeably, he's not nearly as big as he used to be, duh, as Batista. He was never the wrestler The Rock was. He's not as popular of an actor as The Rock is. Nobody cares. So, okay, you want to burn off a bathroom match so I can go to the John or so I can go, you know, in the kitchen, warm up the wings, you know, whatever. Okay, it doesn't matter to me. I don't care.
I mean, yeah, I certainly, my only relief is it's not going to be Triple H and AJ Styles for some weird reason, or like some...
At least it's not a title match.
Yeah. I actually kind of half think that the angle would have worked better if Batista had like beat the crap out of Shawn Michaels from a DX Evolution thing. But
the problem with that is, though, is that you already did that when you were setting up Undertaker, Kane, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, Saudi Arabia match. So, that's been done within the past year. Can't go to that well. You got to pick a new victim. Ric Flair. Whatever.
Well, I don't want to over-scrutinize the storyline of something that is just that, a storyline, but why would Batista want to beat up Flair, though? Because Flair was always good to him.
Flair's Triple H's buddy.
Yeah, that part's obvious, but that...
And he's 70-year-old. You're going to feel a lot more sympathy for Flair than Shawn Michaels getting beat up.
Yeah, but you know what? I think the fact that he's beating up Flair at his birthday in Atlanta might have been a little too much. Like, we've been trained to always hate Triple H in these matches. Now the roles are reversed, that Triple H is the good guy? That's weird, because he's the authority figure, and Batista's the big Hollywood movie star who's avenged some words spoken at the 25th anniversary or whatever. It's just backwards.
No, you're missing the fact that Batista was never likable.
As a wrestler.
Yeah, even when he was as an actor, as a person, from what I hear. I mean, he's not really all that likable in any regard.
The Marvel fandom enjoys him as Drax. I mean, he's got a following there.
Yeah, but the Drax days are over.
Not over yet.
Yes, they are.
This is going to happen 3 weeks before the release of Avengers, and I don't think it's going to impact the box office. He's not that big of a part.
I thought he walked away from because of the director deal.
Whatever happens to the Guardians, that's the entire cast, but like, he for sure is... part of, as far as I know, he should be a follow-up. All the Guardians should be a follow-up in the Avengers movie that'll come out the end of April. I don't think it's going to impact that, because it's not starring David Batista, but...
Regardless, you got to pick one of these guys to be the face. It's a lot easier to root for Triple H for some reason. Don't ask me why, so that's how they did it. They went lazy booking. It's the easy way. Fine, do it. Who cares?
All right.
I'm just going to be interested to see, since they still got 6 weeks till WrestleMania, how they build this thing up, because, Batista's going to be on the Brock Lesnar schedule. You're not going to see him again. Maybe one time before WrestleMania, just so they can actually officially announce a match. But he's off filming movies. He's not going to be popping up on Raw every week. So, again, how do you kill 6 weeks doing this? I don't know. We'll see.
So, you want to move on to some SmackDown reaction?
Sure.
The return of the Hardys as a tag team. I actually thought...
That's what you're opening up with?
Well, let's do a slow build. I didn't expect it.
Well, they don't do a slow build, so I don't know why you would. But okay, fine. Let's jump into the Hardys. Go ahead.
I thought Matt was actually retired and was going to do some back office stuff. I didn't think he was going to come back and wrestle.
Well, in wrestling, you're retired unless you're not.
It's just like comic books. You're killed off until you just come back.
And now, seriously, it could be WWE's way of trying to keep him out of AEW.
Actually, I was going to make this point earlier, and I lost track of it, but I think that's all these NXT cats, too.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's Ricochet, for instance, and the Matt Riddle guys and, folks like
Aleister Black. They would fit in great.
They have histories with these
Yeah, they'd fit
sure.
in great at AEW, yes.
Yeah. So, I get it. So, interesting to see them back as a tag team. I didn't watch it, so I don't know what they're...
But...
Who'd they even wrestle? The Bar?
Yeah.
But see, I like the Bar.
And would you like to guess who went over?
Matt?
No, Jeff. But the Hardys...
Oh, I thought you meant the... I already knew the Hardys won. I just didn't know which one got the pin.
Okay, why?
Yeah, why is the Bar... Who'd the Bar piss off?
Why are you taking guys who have been wrestling for, 25 years or so? And don't get me wrong, Jeff, considering what he does to his body in the ring and outside of the ring, can still do a lot of amazing things. I'm not taking anything away from him. And Matt's not bad either.
It's amazing he can walk.
Yeah.
Let alone wrestle.
For, again, more than one reason. But why are you putting them over guys that could still be relevant?
I don't
get it.
I hate to say this, but
AEW.
Your Ricochet and Aleister Black should be getting over the Hardys. People are out the door.
So should the Bar.
But I'm just saying, if you bring them in, set them up in the match and not let them go over. The Bar is still, I think, it's one of those things. We put Sheamus and Cesaro together, and holy crap, they got over.
Yeah, and they're still a viable tag team.
Oh, super. I really like what they did with the Bar.
The Hardys' role should be to go in there, have really great matches, and lose squeakers while they're making the young guys look good.
Exactly.
Should not be to go over, and I can sit here and promise you, I will promise you that they will have at least one more tag team title reign before one or both of them are gone.
You think they'll be the WrestleMania match for the Usos?
Hey, yeah, why not?
They've never held the blue belts. Maybe that's all it is. Give us the blue belts, put us in the Hall of Fame, bye.
Why not? Hey, sure, what the heck? You got to put somebody in there against the Usos, I guess.
All right, so let's move on to the overarching story throughout the show. If you're looking forward to that match between Kofi Kingston.
No, let's not do that. Let's save that one for last. You got anything else to talk about?
I actually didn't catch all of it, so I don't know what else happened. We already talked about the tag team with Aleister Black and Ricochet. So,
well, what do you think about this crap about putting, and I guess this is kind of a slow spoiler to what you want to talk about, but how you feel about the now you're putting Nakamura and Rusev in a tag team together?
On our first episode of our podcast, which is probably going to be airing simultaneously. You're getting a twofer. You're going to hopefully listen to our first episode. It talks about Elimination Chamber. That's yesterday's news, but we have some other topics and introductions in there. If you skipped right to this one, go back and listen to the first one. But I told you that Rusev is the guy that I would say, hey, let's put the belt on him for a while. So you know I have a high opinion of Rusev. Shinsuke Nakamura has never really clicked for me. I really hate what they've done with him as a heel after the low blow shot at AJ Styles last year's WrestleMania, and apparently that's his only move that's effective. So I don't like what they're doing with them. And putting them together as a tag team makes no more sense, especially if you're just having people go over on them for no apparent reason.
Well, that was the whole point, to feed them to Ricochet and what's his name. I mean,
yeah.
You know,
we talked that earlier, but I don't like it.
No,
I hate it.
I hate it too. And I guess the whole purpose is, well, yeah, they lost because, you know, they're not used to being a tag team. They really don't like each other, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I get it, but that's been done to death.
We have a topic coming up for a future show, maybe next time, which is going to be something to the effect of wrestling tropes that we hate. One I hate is, that I'll give you a preview for, maybe we'll come up with new ones. I won't use this one on the list, but here's a preview. I hate furthering angles by useless, ridiculous, awkward tag teams. Kind of like what we had in our main event tonight for no reason.
You mean when you take guys that are mortal enemies, or they're locked into a feud, and you orchestrate it to where for some stupid reason they're forced to tag team together.
I mean, and I know
that never ends well.
Well, there's the rare occasion where that was the story between Sheamus and Cesaro as well.
Yes,
Blind Squirrel finds a nut every so often, but it makes no sense. So I don't see them as being a real potential tag team, especially if they're dropping matches. I think Rusev's got a lot of potential. He's one of your NXT guys from 5 years ago that you brought in and he got over. And I don't know if he's got some heat in the back or, you know, things that have gone on that he goes up and down because of things outside of the fan reaction, or if that's just Vince being Vince. But, man, you could do a lot more with a guy like Rusev. And that burns me.
And you couldn't with Nakamura, former IWGP champ?
Certainly you can, but just me personally, he doesn't click with me. I don't like his whole artist type of goofy, you know, Captain Jack Sparrow type of personality. Bring an Okada in or somebody, and that I could get behind. I just like his character better. But yeah, whatever. That's me. I mean, wrestling's a buffet. Not everyone gets the salad, right? So, but me personally, I'm just saying my fandom. Man, I like to see you do more with Rusev. All right. So hey, if you're looking forward to that Kofi Kingston Daniel Bryan rematch at Fastlane. Joke's on you, pal. It's not going to happen. So Kevin Owens has been announced as the one taking Kofi's place because, darn it, pal, I know box office. We need box office, pal. And here's your prize fighter. It's going to be Kevin Owens, pal.
So they got the whole, and speaking one of your tropes.
Oh, the contract signing.
The contract signing, yeah.
Because that always happens in every match, right?
Yeah, the contract signing never goes well either. So you got the contract signing. You open up the show. You got table sitting there. You got Daniel Bryan, who I don't like the character, but whatever. You got him sitting there.
Bryan. Yeah, say it right.
He's sitting there with his goofy pot belt hanging over his shoulder, and his bodyguard standing behind him. And you got Stephanie McMahon. You got Shane McMahon.
Oh, Stephanie was in there?
Yeah. Kofi Kingston walks down to the ring with the New Day. So, you know, right there, you're ruling out the whole 2-on-1 beat down, whatever. So that's not going to happen. So anyway, they're getting ready. Kofi's getting ready to sign the contract. Vince McMahon's music hits. He comes out to the stage. Kofi, I love you like a brother, but you're out of the match. Here's the guy that's in it for no reason whatsoever, because he hasn't wrestled in, 8 months or whatever it's been. Kevin Owens.
Huh?
Yeah, you talk about farting in church. I mean, that the fan base there in that arena just went, that was it.
What city were they in tonight?
Somewhere in North Carolina. I don't know if it was Charlotte, but they were in North Carolina.
Okay.
Hence one of the big deals about the Hardy Boys, because it's, you know, they're North Carolina boys.
I didn't put that together.
Yeah. Probably why they won.
Okay, so I've already read some. In fact, I actually caught that part of it. But I saw it on the WWE Network, gave me a notification of it, and I actually read somebody's reaction to it on Facebook. And you know, some of the initial reactions to it's like, oh, man, that means we're going to get Kofi at WrestleMania then. Yes. I don't know if that's what that means.
That person's been smoking Daniel Bryan's belt. I don't know why you come up with that. There's no logical connector there. Well, no, it was supposed to be Kevin Owens and Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania, but since they're putting that on at Fastlane, you must be getting Kofi at WrestleMania. Nah, not necessarily.
I mean, look, I could see a storyline that leads there.
No, I see a storyline that leads to at least one, again, of my tropes that I hate, at least one goofy, stupid triple threat match. I promise you, you're going to get at least one of those at a pay-per-view.
Do you suppose that one might actually be the WrestleMania match, the triple threat?
Well, could be. I mean, WWE loves those things.
They could still put Kofi into the triple threat at Fastlane, and yeah, I don't know where that leaves you for WrestleMania, but it's here's one of the things that frustrates me about WrestleMania, and I get that they don't need to do this, and you alluded to it earlier. I remember a day when your WrestleMania main events were being set up at a Royal Rumble in February, and you got like, oh, good, it's going to get good. I can't wait to WrestleMania. In more recent years, you're like, man, I don't even know who AJ Styles wrestling. And literally the week before, Shane McMahon's like, you don't have a match at WrestleMania? You do now. I'm like, man.
Hey, last year, you didn't even know the Undertaker was going to wrestle at all.
Yeah, I mean, you didn't know that until the middle of the show. And I'm just like, this is WrestleMania. Shouldn't we be more
building matches?
Knowledgeable of what the matches are going to be. And look, I get it. WrestleMania's probably already sold out. People are going to watch it anyway. It doesn't matter what the matches are. But I still kind of want to know, quit screwing around with the matches on me. Tell me what they're going to be so I can truly get psyched for these as the big prize fights. If this is what the season is building up to, is this WrestleMania.
Hold on, wait a minute.
If it's three triple threat matches for three of the four championships, I'm going to be like, that's overkill.
Wait a minute. There is a piece of this puzzle that apparently I'm forgetting.
Which means I probably am too.
Who won the Royal Rumble and who's supposed to get the title match?
That was Seth. Seth won the Royal Rumble. That's why.
Okay,
he's
so that's why
Brock.
He's got Brock. Okay.
And by the way, I just alluded to that's going to be a triple threat match, and I actually don't think that one will be. But I'm just saying you could see a way to get Roman in that, and then you could put Becky in that one, and then maybe Kofi.
Roman in it, because that way Seth beats Roman, because Roman's too weak from his leukemia. Brock never has to lose. I mean, you know.
The pieces all fall together a little too nicely for him, doesn't it?
Well, they could.
I mean, fall together too nicely for Brock, because he could walk away with that.
Yeah.
You know, at least with that. Especially, I don't know if the man's ever going to step into an octagon again, but, you know, if he does, he probably doesn't want to leave WWF losing to a 210-pound Seth Rollins.
Oh, he doesn't care.
It's overcomplicating it. But I get it. Like you said, there's 6 weeks left. There's no logic to it.
Here's why I hate modern-day wrestling. There's no logic to the storylines. Kevin Owens has been out of action for I don't know how long now with the knee problems. Why all of a sudden does he waltz back in and gets a title match? Zero logic. That's why the fans, yeah, I get it. Kofi, first of all, lucked into his spot Elimination Chamber anyway because of the injury to Muhammad Ali or whatever his name is. What's his name? Anyways, so
this, yes, Mustafa Ali. Let's say.
Okay, Muhammad Ali. I wasn't that far off. Anyway, this kid gets hurt. Okay, I know they were setting him for the push. That's how Kofi slides in there. Kofi probably overachieved that night. Not saying Kofi's not great. He is, but you know, he was intended to be a placeholder. You want to reward him with a title match? Fine. You want to reward him with a title run? Wrong. For all you people listening, and you think Kofi deserves a title run because of that match, let me tell you something. Wrestling didn't always be a participation trophy sport. Not everybody got to carry the belt. He doesn't get to just touch the belt for a little bit because he put on one good match. Get that out of your heads, okay?
Or even because he's been there
11 years.
For 12 years, and has always done exactly what's been asked of
him. Yeah, that doesn't mean you get to carry the belt, okay? So just get that out of your heads. He's not a champion, not on that level, so just, you know, move past
He's not a top guy main eventer. And by the way, that's okay. They can't all be.
No, but the point of the story is, you know, so Kofi has that great match, and you got the fans, you know, he deserves a title match, he deserves a rematch. Fine, give him a rematch at somewhere, let him have this thing at Fastlane, bring in Kevin Owens from the injury, have him start a program, and give him a clean, deserved opportunity at WrestleMania, if that's what you want to do. This crap, how they do it nowadays, where Vince McMahon, nobody knows Kevin Owens is even in the building. Stephanie McMahon, Shane McMahon, they all act like, oh, yeah, who are you?
Can I back to logic? Why is Stephanie there? She runs Raw.
She's a McMahon. I don't know.
But still, it just doesn't make sense from a storyline. It's like, look, we all know it's fake. We know it's scripted. But, like, I think I said this last week, if we're watching The Walking Dead and the zombies break into a musical number, start tap dancing, we're going to be like, what are they doing? This makes no sense.
Point is, you know, Vince McMahon brings out Kevin Owens like he found him on the street and said, hey, by the way, I'm putting this guy in the title match instead of Kofi. Yeah, I understand why the fans are ticked off, because there was no logical transition to it. Now, is Kofi ultimately going to stay in the program somehow? Of course he is. He's not hosed out. We saw that tonight. We haven't disclosed this part yet. This is the other thing you want to talk about. Then, of course, at the end of the night, you get Jerry's trophy hates, whatever.
A gimmick.
The gimmick, you know, where you put the two enemies against, you know, to force them to tag. Kofi and Kevin Owens tags up against Daniel Bryan and the Tree. And
Bryan.
Yeah, and
I like the Tree.
That's
actually a cool name for a wrestler.
Tree. Yeah, he's the Tree.
The Big Oak.
Did you say oaf?
I said oak, but either one.
Okay.
And I think Bludgeon Brother number two.
I think Kofi actually got the win. I don't know.
No, Kevin did.
Over who?
Daniel Bryan.
So obviously Kofi is not out of the picture. Now Kevin gets to say that he's earned his match because he, you know, it's the whole Eddie Gilbert, Ricky Steamboat, Ric Flair, Barry Windham, you know. I pinned the champ. I deserve a match. Okay, fine. Kofi's not out of this. I just wish they had done it different.
The same steps could have been, hey, Kevin Owens is back. He's going to be at a match with Kofi Kingston against Daniel Bryan. Kevin Owens gets the pin, and then suddenly Kofi Kingston has to wrestle Kevin Owens at Fastlane to see who actually gets the WrestleMania match. That's a progression anyway.
Or you could have done it a lot more simpler than that and just had the Kofi-Daniel Bryan match at WrestleMania. Kevin Owens comes out and interferes and jumps Daniel Bryan and, you know, whatever, and there you go. There's your WrestleMania match. Why we're doing all this Bruce Pritchard crap, I guess is because he's back. I don't know. That's the only explanation I have for it.
Well, now, we can't blame this on Bruce Pritchard. We don't know if he's...
I just did.
Yeah, but come on. Do you really think that's Bruce Pritchard crap when that's what the WWE's been doing for the last 12 years or whatever?
Well, I don't think that, you know, when you don't see Bruce Pritchard in the picture, you don't see it nearly this complicated. I think the complexity is a Bruce Pritchard trademark. I could
don't
be
know.
Wrong.
I think WWE's, since I've been back watching WWE since 2014, it seems like this is part of the formula. It's a formula I don't like. That's not great. But you're right. To me, this is the force. We're going to create the animosity between these two because Vince McMahon made an announcement. Now we're going to force them to be a tag team, which means now they got to hate each other, right?
Yeah, even though, I mean, okay, if you're Kofi, yeah, you'd be upset. You'd be upset at Vince. I get it. Kevin Owens, wasn't his fault. I mean, nobody came out and said that Kevin Owens did anything sneaky to lobby against Kofi and he cheated him. You know, then you interview Kevin Owens in the back after that announcement. Stephanie and Shane are talking to him back there in one of those little behind the scenes deals. Oh no, Kofi deserves it, and you know, I understand why he's upset. You know, I have a lot of respect for Kofi and blah blah blah. Just shut up. You know, if you're gonna blow this thing up, blow it up right. And that's what I'm with you. That's what I hate about the modern booking.
All right, before we wrap up our show, we had one announcement today, which these announcements usually come on Monday, but I guess with Roman and Ric Flair's birthday, it'd be very anticlimactic and super oh-hum to have announced this on Monday. But today we got the announcement.
Plus nobody cared.
Yeah, the latest inductee of
they still don't care.
WWE Hall of Fame. He's the Honky Tonk Man.
The greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time.
He was definitely the greatest Intercontinental Champion of 1988.
Well, he's the longest reigning.
Even 451 days.
Even still today.
Whatever. Yeah. See, this is how the Hall of Fame announcements usually go. The first one you get is the headliner. Then they go back to the who cares ones up until the last one announced would be like the second most interesting one. So this is like...
Which would probably be the Hart Foundation.
Do you think they'll do that?
That's still the word on the curb. So I'm expecting it.
I like the fact that Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart would both become two-time inductees in the same night. Because, like, who do you make the next two-time inductee behind Flair? I get Shawn Michaels will have to be one. But I get doing him and Bret at the same time. And, of course, with Jim Neidhart having just passed. But so this is a topic Greg and I have had quite a bit over the years. Is there are some people, and I'm going to say it right now, like the Honky Tonk Man, that I'm like, really, is he Hall of Fame?
He's Coco Beware to me.
I guess at least Honky Tonk Man has a milestone of a longest single reign, had the Intercontinental Champion, which I guess was his only title and run, right? I mean, he never had a tag.
Yeah, but see, that doesn't mean anything to me because we all know, hate to break the news, spoiler alert, this is a scripted sport.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
so
yeah,
that,
yeah.
To me, that doesn't mean anything. Focus on Honky Tonk Man. Is he actually Hall of Fame material?
Was he that entertaining of a character in that era?
No.
Off the top of my head, the only three things I can tell you that the man did was the upset victory over Steamboat, which was a very, like, transition of the IC belt.
Just because Steamboat needed to be with his family, had to take the belt off him, blah, blah,
which
blah.
Which we as fans at the time, especially 12-year-old Jerry, didn't know them. Like,
well,
like,
they didn't induct him into Hall of Fame then either. So, you know, now they are, and now we know it.
And then the second thing is the little mini feud he had with Randy Savage before Randy went off and won the title at WrestleMania 4. That's where he was... That's who he was feuding with when the Hogan-Andre twin ref thing happened, which I think was most interesting because of what Jimmy Hart and the Hart Foundation else brought to it, like that faction beating up Randy Savage. And then finally just Ultimate Warrior smashing him for the belt at that SummerSlam. So I think that was the only three things I can really tell you that the man did.
No, you've missed two key facts here.
I'm sure I have.
One of them was that god-awful tag team that he had with Greg Valentine when they dyed Greg Valentine's hair.
Rhythm and Blues.
And made him Elvis, too.
See, I totally forgot about that.
Yeah, you're a lucky guy. So you got that. He's got that going for him. And then the biggest thing that he's actually known for over the course of his entire career is being Jerry Lawler's cousin.
Oh, I'm just talking about his WWF career. But no,
I am, too.
I get
I mean,
that.
Okay, because follow the train of thought here. He's not in Memphis wrestling as one of the Blonde Bombers or, you know, one of the other tag teams that he was part of for however many years. He's not in the Hart First family. He's not then picked up by WWE, then WWF. None of that happens if he's not Jerry Lawler's cousin because he was not that good. He sucked. So let's call the spade the spade. Honky Tonk Man gets in the WWE Hall of Fame because he's Jerry Lawler's cousin. End of story. You want to know how I feel about it?
I was going to say, I don't know what else to say that. Except to say that, yeah, when I saw that come through, my reaction was like, oh, him? Come on. I want to know, like, okay, fine, he's Jerry Lawler's cousin, but he's been Jerry Lawler's cousin for a long time. Why now? Why this year? Do you think there's like a Rolodex on someone's table of, here are the real gimmicky guys that we probably eventually want to put in the Hall of Fame because we need, you know, we need the opening act kind of guys. And we want to keep doing five or six guys in the Hall of Fame every year. So we're going to eventually have to put people like him and Coco Beware in, blah, 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 blah. So I guess he comes up next alphabetically?
No, you see, actually you don't.
Is there something about...
I was thinking dartboard, actually.
Because we're in New York, too, so that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, no, actually you don't. You just made a statement there that is factually incorrect. You do not have to put those guys in the Hall of Fame. Coco Beware, at least like you said, Honky Tonk Man actually had a title reign.
Look. I'm not saying you have to put him in by my perspective, but just at some point, I think the way the McMahons see that selection process is kind of like what you said, not wins and losses and titles, but man, what an entertaining character. The Honky Tonk Man,
he was over. They weren't. Coco Beware wasn't entertaining.
No, Coco Beware wasn't, but I'll at least
neither was Honky Tonk Man.
Honky Tonk Man, for me, had go-home heat, but he certainly had his fair share of feuds.
No,
he's the IC champion.
Big deal. Okay, another fact you left out. Honky Tonk Man is the first guy that I can remember, and maybe somebody out there, they're more familiar with older wrestling, whatever. Honky Tonk Man to me, I will give him credit of inventing the El Kabong.
What's the El Kabong?
The guitar smash.
Oh. We joked this years ago about the ladder matches that I wish they'd do a little, like if I was doing a Saturday Night Live parody of the WWE Hall of Fame, I would, ladies and gentlemen, you've seen him in all the Honky Tonk Man's matches, and he was awesome, he was great. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight we're inducting the guitar. And they just bring out the guitar on a...
Not just the Honky Tonk Man. Jeff Jarrett. But Elias.
But that's a different guitar.
He's had a career that spanned 30 years up to this point. 32 years now.
The joke came up with someone coming up there and talking about how monumental the Shawn Michaels Razor Ramon ladder match was at WrestleMania 10 and how it was just the greatest match ever and really set the standard for ladder match. And tonight, we're going to induct the ladder.
I mean, there's a lot of people on my list that I don't think should have ever been inducted in the Hall of Fame. Honky Tonk Man has moved up to number one, and he hasn't even in yet. Coco Beware's on the list.
Yeah, no arguments here.
No.
No arguments. I'll be honest with you. I get it, and I'm going to split some hairs here. The Bushwhackers. The Sheep Herders were a different team, but like the Bushwhackers as that character in presenting them like that, man.
No, I agree.
Comedy act of all comedy acts. I mean, they were fun.
But at least I can justify them because I do know what they were before they were WWE. Yeah. Coco Beware and Wayne Ferris didn't have that. Yeah, I don't care.
Don't be hating on the PYTs now. Come on.
The what?
The Pretty Young Things. Coco Beware or Coco Ware and Norvell Austin, the Florida U.S. Tag Team Champions. I think they may have held some belts in World Class too.
Well, they were also big in Memphis. Coco had a run. That's how Coco got to WWF too.
Should they just put in a Jerry Lawler Memphis wing and just like throw him there as like a second tier wing?
Well, I mean, you and I have had this conversation about people that should be in the Hall of Fame. One of those guys, if you consider his entire body of work, another Memphis guy, might be Jimmy Hart. I mean, that's where he come from.
Whoa. Jimmy Hart's in.
Did he go in?
Okay, I'm gonna fact check this, but I thought Jimmy Hart was in. I thought he was part of that 2005 class.
Like you're wanting me to remember 2005? I couldn't tell you who went in yet last year.
Fair. Yeah, Jimmy Hart's in.
Well, okay, there you go. But you got him.
Oh, let me just absolutely confirm that.
This just in.
Yeah, you were right. 2005. You even had the year right.
Nailed it.
The reason I know the year is because that was the year like Hogan went in. So there was a lot of like Piper going that year or whatever. So okay. Look, we know there are some guys who aren't in the Hall of Fame, not because perhaps they wouldn't have been denied Hall of Fame status, but they've got like outside of the ring type of reasons why maybe the WWE wouldn't be endorsing them. Demolition, for instance, or...
Get me started on Demolition.
I would have said China, too, but at least they've snuck her in through the most recent DX announcement. So Big Van Vader's one that people are trying to push for, particularly when they knew he was pretty much dying, even just, I think, two Hall of Fame ago is when Leon White or his family one had announced that, yeah, hey, there's some heart failure, heart issues, and I may or may not see 2018 or whatever.
Plus he inducted Stan Hansen a couple years ago too.
Yeah, so it's not like he's out of the fold.
Right. So he should be in.
And they should have put
Demolition
him in.
Should be in. Now I was never a Demolition fan because I was a Road Warrior fan, but you cannot deny that they were not a major part of a really good tag team era from the WWF perspective.
And the two individual guys were legit guys who had success in other ways.
Oh, Barry Darso and Bill Eady, absolutely. I mean, yeah. You got Mass Superstar, you got Crusher Khrushchev, you got Blacktop Bully.
and the Repo Man.
And the Golfing Pro. Didn't he do a gimmick when he was a Golfing Pro?
He did.
Yeah.
But
he actually started out as Man Mountain Darso. I don't know if you knew that.
Oh, yeah. No,
I mean, they're both legit guys. I mean, you go back to the early 70s with Bill Eady when he was one of the Mongols and he was an IWA tag champ. So,
I mean, the IWA titles alone should get a guy in the Hall of Fame.
Shut up.
No, hey, I've met the man. You and I met him last summer at a Chillicothe event. And, man, I thought it was super cool meeting him. So I'm with you. You know, like, I never wanted to like Demolition because even 12-year-old Jerry knew that they were just our version of the Road Warriors in WWE. But they grew on me. Like,
Bam Bam Bigelow should be in.
Yeah, yeah.
King Kong Bundy.
And Bigelow would be great because they're going to be in Jersey.
King Kong Bundy headlined, what was it, WrestleMania 2 with Hogan?
2, yeah.
And Los Angeles in that big, ugly cage.
Big Blue.
Because a real cage couldn't hold Bundy. But, flipping honky-tonk, man.
Yeah, I mean, if we didn't prep this particular topic, if we needed to make a list of people who should go in ahead of honky-tonk, man, I don't think that'd be hard to do.
No, well, we just gave you 10 people.
Yeah.
Ronnie Garvin, Gary Hart.
I'd put Lex Luger in there ahead of him.
I absolutely think Lex Luger should go in there. Not only, he didn't have the greatest WWF career, but his body of work as a horseman, post-horseman, WCW.
He did hold all the titles.
Yeah.
TV, U.S., yeah, World Tag, WCW, Big Gold. He was a part of that Monday Night era.
The Midnight Express, for God's sake.
Jim Cornette.
The Fabulous Ones. If you know Stan Lane, because he was a part of the Midnight Express, you know that he also had the Fabulous Ones. And Steve Kern, I mean, his career goes back to the early 70s. He was big in Florida.
I think late 60s, actually. I think he started in, like, 68.
I mean, he was big in Florida. He had a nice career in Memphis.
He was the Skinner.
But Midnight Express, I had to put Rock and Roll Express and Midnight Express in the same year.
Well, then you know what?
Understand the history.
Rumor has it WrestleMania is supposed to be in Tampa, Florida next year. Be a great time to put the Fabulous Ones in Tampa.
Hey, I'm not hating it.
They always put some obscure old-timers in there that had no connection with WWE.
It took them forever to put the Freebirds in.
Well, okay, but they finally got in. And who in the WWE actually knew who Jimmy Garvin was?
Oh, I bet there's a lot of people who are like, oh, yeah, Michael Hayes and his dad. All right. Well, hey, we look forward to some additional Hall of Fame topics as we get closer to that, because we have noodled around more formally the because we need to go through a list, because, you know, by the way, this happens a lot. I hear a lot of people on podcasts and people on the social media like, oh, they should put so-and-so in. It's like, well, yeah, he was inducted in 08 because, you know, when you watch that show, they do, like, I forget what they call it, like a heritage wing, legacy wing, or whatever that they...
Well, they just kind of breeze by everybody.
Yeah. Where they just, like, yeah, show, like, 9 names in, like, 7 seconds.
Yeah, it's like watching the credits at the end of a movie. It just goes up and you don't even...
It actually plays off more like the Oscars, like, in memoriam type of thing.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, they put Stan Stasiak in.
Let me ask you this question, just as the last question.
Yeah.
Because there is two examples off the top of my head that I can think of. There may be more, but of course, this was old days. They haven't done it since they revamped and reopened the Hall of Fame, you know, whatever. But when the Hall of Fame first started and they put in all the first-timers, how do you feel about about putting jobbers in? Specifically, I'm referencing S.D. Jones, Johnny Rods, and Baron Cicluna, who are all 3 WWE Hall of Famers.
You're talking about, let me clean that up, please. You're talking about the enhancement talents. Jabbers.
Talking about the guys that always laid on their backs.
Yeah. No, hey, that's an interesting one, because if you really think about a wrestling Hall of Fame, it's about people who did the most of the best to build the business. How awesome did you know that King Kong Bundy was when he put S.D. Jones down in 7 seconds at WrestleMania 1, right?
Oh, before King Kong Bundy, everybody knew who S.D. Jones
of course,
was.
But like
S.D. Jones, Rick McGraw, Frankie Williams. Remember the first guy that got beat up on Piper's Pit?
Yeah. So he was from Columbus, Ohio.
See?
Allegedly.
Or if you want to go outside the WWE, of course, you got the U.S. Junior Heavyweight Champion. No, was he the U.S. Junior Heavyweight Champion? Or the Alabama?
Alabama
Junior Heavyweight Champion, Mike Jackson. You got Mike Boyette from UWF.
Hey, and I've heard legitimately a lot of wrestlers talk about how working with George South was like a night off. Back when the enhancement talents would actually have a few good moments of the match so that Ric Flair had somebody to overcome.
The Mulkeys.
The Mulkeys.
The Ding Dongs.
I mean, the Mulkeys. Hey, the Mulkeys participated in the 1988, the 30th annual Jim Crockett Senior Memorial Cup.
The Conquistadors. No, how do you feel about putting the jobbers in?
Actually, I'm okay with it. If it's people like some of the people we just said who were consistently the guys who built the talent, who built the matches, who played an important part in, like, given us the TV entertainment, particularly in the era when, like, yeah, we're not getting Ric Flair and Sting.
Yeah, I'm not talking about the plumber that's just happened to be wrestling in the studio part-time. No,
But the people who had the lifeline, like, you brought in a George South because you needed, like, throughout the TV tapings, your Tully Blanchard, Arn Anderson, they needed a good...
Jim Cornette's favorite, Tim Horner.
Yeah, you know, here's where you get into a slippery slope. Like, Tim Horner played the role of enhancement talent in some days, and then, like, was UWF tag team champions on other days.
Well, that's okay. That just shows that on any given night.
Yeah, yeah.
Anybody can win a match.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing about a Hall of Fame, about a made-up business, because, you know, like, who... Yeah, I've heard people argue too. It's like, well, what about the promoters and the producers and the bookers and the, you know, people who had significant contributions just completely behind the scenes? Do you have a Hall of Fame place for them if they're? And I can't even think of a good example off the top of my head. Some of those guys might be in it. I don't know. How far do you take it?
Well, I think you take it to the point where people actually recognize the name in that situation.
And would care to watch.
I mean let's be fair, yeah. A Jim Crockett belongs in. A Bill Watts belongs in.
And actually, those guys might be in. I'd have to double check that. Kevin Sullivan for his awesome booking in WCW Monday Night Era.
A Ken Mantell from World Class. Nah. Even though he did most of the booking there towards the end, and Gary Hart had a lot of bad things to say about Ken Mantell.
Man, we had this conversation last week. If Gary Hart's not in the Hall of Fame, that's a crime.
Yeah, I mean, Gary Hart to me is on the Mount Rushmore of managers. Period. You get four managers on the Mount Rushmore. Gary Hart's one of them to me.
And for those of you who might say, like, well, Gary Hart didn't have a presence in WWE. Well, the WWE right now as it exists is where the legacy of World Class, AWA, WCW, Crockett, they all funnel into what is now WWE.
By the way, if you want to get technical, all you geeks, Gary Hart did wrestle for the WWF as a jobber back in the late 60s. So, suck it.
All right, well, guys, thanks for tuning in. We're going to have another show really quick. So, subscribe to our channel. You'll know when our shows come up. We're going to be just talking like this. We want to talk about just what's going on, what's our immediate reactions. 75% of what we talk about, we're talking about with each other for the first time. So you get this back and forth.
We're going to be calling people by the wrong names.
Yeah. So, we're just fans. We're not studying this stuff.
It's not because we're ignorant. It's because we don't care.
These aren't our full-time jobs, but, like, we enjoy talking like this. So we hope you guys enjoy listening to a couple guys talking about this. So I'm Jerry. This is my brother, Greg. We're the Wrestling Brother Fan Network, and we're out.